Hello and welcome to All Villa No Filler, a podcast all about Aston Villa, the world's greatest football team. Villa showed why they're the top team in the Midlands with a 2-0 win over Wolves. More on that in a sec. And forget the chocolate eggs. What you really want this Easter is one of Frankie's spicy questions, which he'll serve up later in the show. Or, you know, one of those chocolates that they mix kind of like the chilies with. You know, the ones, Frankie, I'm talking about, the sort of spicy chocolates.
Yeah.
Ones. Maybe one of those is being served later.
Yeah. The kind that would just draw tears to your eyes as you put, you know, a little bit on your tongue. Yeah, I know.
That's it. So one of those questions would be quite nice, Frankie.
Yeah.
But anyway, Frankie, how are you? How are things?
Oh, very good, George. You know, it's a very important weekend. It's the Easter holiday, so you know, have a great time, all those who celebrate. But George, you know, it's one of the most important dates in the religious calendar. Do you know what my most important date is?
What's your most important date, Frankie?
October 24th. It's the day I celebrate because it's the day when Unai Emery turned up at Aston Villa to lead us into the promised land, from the darkness.
Our very own Messiah, Frankie.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you could argue, what is the greater miracle? Is it him turning around our fortunes on the pitch, or is it the loaves and the fishes?
Yeah.
It's a tough one.
Turning around what Stevie G had done there. I think Professor Unai might be edging it. Although, have you seen June? Have you seen June the movie?
Yes, I have. Yes.
June.
He's our very own Lisan Al Gaib, Frankie.
Lisan, as they call him, the Messiah, Lisan Al Gaib, Unai Al Gaib.
Unai Al Gaib.
I'm just like Javier Bardem in the film whenever Timothy Chalamet's Paul Atreides does anything well, and he's like, Lisan Al Gaib. And I'm like, this is anytime Unai Emery does any tactical magic, I'm like, Lisan Al Gaib. He is here. I tell you, I'd go to war for. Unai Al Gaib, for Professor Unai, if he ever asked me to. Hopefully I don't get a knock at the door tomorrow from security. Like, I've just heard you might go to war for somebody.
We're getting a little bit concerned about
big
that.
Big figure of speech. It's about Unai Emery. Yeah. Although if he did tell me to go fly to Mars or across space to go and fight some space war, I'd probably do it at the moment.
Yeah,
I would.
I think so. No questions asked, I think. I'd basically say, all right, Unai, I tell you what, you get top four for us and I'll fly to Neptune for you, okay? Yeah. How about that?
Yeah.
Sounds like a deal.
Yeah. Hopefully people listening to this have actually seen June 2. I strongly recommend it.
What a film. Yeah,
then they'd get
amazing.
The references. Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's a brilliant film. Yeah.
Who would be our Paul Atreides? John McGinn?
Well, it would have been Jack Grealish back in the day. He looks a little bit like Timothy Chalamet. Good to see that. yesterday against Wolves, it was probably... who would it have been? Who was our main man? I mean, Moussa Diaby got man of the match, didn't he?
Was decent, yeah.
Yeah,
Diaby.
Maybe he's earned it after yesterday.
Yeah, Saniolo maybe kind of looks more like Paul Atreides and sort of carries himself perhaps a bit more like Paul Atreides.
He does,
and I think we'll talk about him in a short while. He is a very much a maverick wild card, isn't he?
Yeah.
Saniolo.
He's got the vibe. I could see him as like a Roman emperor, but one of those like mad Roman emperors who. They don't last too long, but in that short spell, you remember them forever because of all the sort of brilliant mad stuff they did.
Yeah, exactly. It's sort of, he would have built sort of, you know, Hadrian's Wall, or, you know, burnt Rome to the ground or something.
Or while he played the fiddle or something.
While he played the fiddle, exactly. Yeah. Well, Frankie, the game itself, it was 2-0. Yeah. It was much more comfortable than I was certainly anticipating. Our record against Wolves in the Premier League isn't great. In fact, I think the last time we beat them was 2003 when Pablo Angel scored. He was in the crowd watching the game, our very handsome former Colombian striker.
Oh, yeah.
He was there. What did you make of the victory?
Yeah, well, it was very, very comfortable. I was in the stadium. I wasn't too far from Juan Pablo Angel himself, Tyra Mings and John McGinn as well. That was probably a highlight of the game for me when they appeared on the screen.
Yeah.
And then the little thumbs up and the whole stadium cheering it. Well, it was
nice.
That was pretty magic. But I tell you, in the stadium itself, there's a buzz, there's an atmosphere. In the second half, when there was a long spell where the linesman's something was up with the linesman, so they had to take time fixing probably a communication thing. And normally that's a tight sort of moment where the fans get a bit edgy and they're like, come on, get on with it. What's wrong with you?
Yeah, or it gets a bit flat as well. That can happen.
Instead, it reminded me of when Villa went 2-0 up in the playoff final against Derby a couple of years ago, where it turned into a bit of a carnival atmosphere. And the whole stadium was just buzzing. And like, I'm at the top of the Trinity Road stand and I'm like, I have been going to this place since the early 90s. And I have been in this place so many times and I've been surrounded by people screaming at the players after 1 minute for misplacing a pass, where it's been very quiet, where there's been lots of moaning, or it's just flat over. But yesterday, and I felt this quite a lot recently, but yesterday I thought there's a buzz here. There's a feeling that something's happening. And it was magic to experience that again. You know, when Villa Park's on it, particularly under the floodlights, it's just one of the best places to be in the world. And, I thought Villa, generally, I thought it was we were just dominant. I thought it felt like a relatively routine victory, which is quite surprising given, you know, Wolves are, you know, they're well coached. They're a difficult side to play against. They've had some really good results themselves. You know, they won at Spurs away recently. They're a decent side, but I think the difference ultimately was that we had an X factor in players like Bailey, Diaby, Zaniolo. And I think Wolves just, you know, I know Gary O'Neill made the excuse after the game about missing players. I mean, look, yeah. Aston Villa have been missing players every bloody day this season. But I did feel like Wolves were missing that X factor. I think if they'd had a Neto or a Huang, I think it would have helped them. But at the same time, I'm still not sure it would have made that much of a difference. I just felt Villa were very on top, very in control. And there was only one moment in the first half, you know, where I think the first 20 minutes, Wolves were well set up. I think they made it hard for us to play out. They had the same structure Chelsea had against us. I think Liverpool early this season, obviously he's done his homework on us. So the first 20 minutes, you know, it was difficult to play out. Ike Nuri had a brilliant chance, which he should have taken. Mm-hmm. But Emi Martinez shows why he's the best goalkeeper in the world and why we need him so much, because he bailed us out when we needed it. And then after that, I thought Villa took control. And I think a 2-0 win was deserved. I mean, what did you think?
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I think you're right. I think, you know, if Wolves did have some of their key players, I mean, you know, Huang has been brilliant for them this season. Neto's obviously probably their best player. You know, any club is going to miss players of that quality. And obviously they had to start a teenager from the youth academy up front. And credit to him, he put himself about a bit. But obviously it's always going to be a challenge against a team that's challenging for the top four like we are, away from home as far as they're concerned. So, yeah, and I think you can tell as well, we had options got off the bench, didn't we? The fact that, you know, even, you know, Duran, again, he's a bit of a, we all know he's a mad player, but he's got this quality about him. And, you know, Zaniolo has shown a fair bit of form.
Our agents of chaos.
Oh, yeah. I mean, both of them are just, they make me laugh. Like, I watch them play and I laugh out loud when they play football. They just bring me complete joy. But there's quality to their play too. And so, you know, they can be game changers when they're in form. And you know, Wolves just didn't really have those sorts of options off the bench. And I think once Aiton already missed that opportunity, if they scored, then it would have had a different flavour that game, I think. But after that was missed, or after Martinez saved it, rather, I think, you know, their heads dropped a little bit and we managed to take a bit more control of the game and dominate in the midfield and, you know, playing some wonderful balls through to our attacking players. And Diaby's finding a bit of form as well at the moment, which is really, really good to see. I think, you know, if he can continue that until the end of the season. I mean, he started the season really strongly, remember, Frankie? You know, the goal against Newcastle, first game of the season, a few other early goals as well. And then during the middle part of the season, his form kind of dropped off. But then in fairness, a lot of that was down to Bailey's form improving so much. So he was sort of in and out of the side, really. But now he's playing again and he's contributing, he's scoring. And it was a brilliant goal. You know, I know he had a lot of time to size it up and stuff, but it was
really,
it was
well kept. They're really hard to finish those.
Like, yeah,
you can
exactly.
Easily just whack it over the bar.
Absolutely. Or, you know, smash it, you know,
George, air shot it.
Yeah, just miss it completely and fall over on your ass.
I remember playing six-a-side once back in Sheffield Uni with somebody who really tried to play football but just couldn't do it. And I'll never forget the ball bouncing to him really slowly. And he went to hit it. And the timing, somehow, he shouted, "It's mine!" Went for it and totally air-shotted as the ball slowly bounced past him. And I've never seen an entire pitch in a competitive game break down in tears laughing. Like, it was like everyone just stopped playing football. Like, the referee had to, like, stop the game because it was just so funny.
I love that.
That could very easily have happened yesterday for poor.
Oh, definitely. I think in that instance, the combination of shouting "it's mine" with such conviction and then completely air-shotting it, I think that's an excellent combination.
Still one of the favourite moments of my life, that. There's just certain moments that make me laugh every time I think about it.
I think maybe DRB about 4 weeks ago probably would have air-shotted. But as I said, he's a man that's sort of finding a bit of form now. And I kind of felt as soon as the ball fell to him that, you know, there's a very good chance this one was going in. And he just thumped it in, didn't he? A proper net buster, that one, Frankie.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
And then second half sort of continued in that sort of vein. And we continued to sort of create chances. And then great to see Ezri Konsa get that bizarre goal.
The Rock. He meant it.
Of course he did. Brilliant week for him, is, you know, getting his first two.
Yeah.
His caps for England.
And he looked a natural. He fit it exactly well, as we always said, George. We always knew it. He looks like a natural at that level.
Yeah, the call up was a long time coming, and he did his chances no harm at all in terms of getting a call up for the Euros this year. I think the fact he's so versatile, the fact he can play right back as we've seen for England, obviously for Villa, and centre half too, I think it puts him ahead of perhaps other potential candidates. So that was brilliant. And then, obviously getting that goal and just that bit of play where he had the speed and awareness to just, even at that stage in the game when it was 70-odd minutes, just to bomb on past Diaby's awareness to know that Konsa was running on. He plays it in. And obviously, you know, Konsa was trying to chip it in for Duran, but, you know, he caught it lovely. Yeah. And it just went in off the post.
It shows his versatility as well, doesn't he? He's a centre-back by trade. And the fact he's been able to adapt to right-back so much, which is why I always thought he worked for England.
Yeah, we talked about this, didn't we, at the start of the season.
But, I think what I'd say as well is, interesting with Diaby, because what I noticed teams have been doing to him all the time, and I watched it very closely yesterday with Wolves, is that Wolves always had a centre-back on Diaby, just followed him all over the pitch, wherever he went. And so I thought with Diaby, part of the reason he fell out of form was, obviously, as you mentioned, you know, Bailey coming into form, it's, you know, probably affects how Diaby plays. I think the two of them are working really well together now, but... Yeah. You know, it's Diaby's first season in the Premier League, so there's likely to be a bit of a lean spell. But he's obviously in recent games really come back into form. But part of it, I think, is because teams started targeting him specifically and following him around. And so he's got to get used to having, you know, he's adapting to a new role. He played as a winger at Bayer Leverkusen, and he's having to adapt to sort of back to goal.
Yeah.
Big defenders on him, a very physical league. It's of course, you know, you got to give him leeway if he's going to have a bit of a down spell, getting used to that role. And you could see it yesterday. Wolves had a big man on him. I thought he was excellent again. He figured out ways to deal with that, which is great to show that he's learning and adapting to that. But it also did make me think, you know, like if you were to think of the transfer window, you've got Bailey and Diaby, who can both play as wingers, elite wingers. And obviously Diaby can play as that second striker. Bailey can do as well, but Diaby's probably more the second striker.
Yeah.
But if you were to go next season and think, what if we got somebody who's a little bit more physical, so that Diaby could go out right and then Bailey could go to the bench and Bailey could come back onto the right and Diaby onto the bench, or Diaby's the second striker. Maybe if you had a little Morgan Gibbs-White in there. I said what I said, George.
Okay. Morgan Gibbs-White,
maybe, you know, maybe he'd be a nice little physical addition, you know.
He's someone, a good player.
Another option there, you know, win the Premier League this season. But yeah, but that's just something I thought. But no, I thought Diaby again, really good. But to other observations I make though, George, Morgan Rodgers.
Now, you know what?
Tell
I was just
what.
Thinking about him. Yeah, I was thinking about him. He's looking. I like how we're sort of managing him at the moment. You know, he's not tending to play full games. He either starts or gets subbed off, or he'll get subbed on. He'll play portions of the game, but you can there's definitely a player there, Frankie.
Yeah.
You know, there were a few people who were a bit sort of unsure about, you know, his quality, how he would fit in. I remember I was watching a podcast which focuses on championship football, and two lads were saying they were really surprised that Villa have gone for him. They thought they made a mistake. They thought they meant maybe Morgan Whittaker or something.
Two lads making a podcast. What a pair of losers.
It'll never catch on.
Midlife crisis.
Bunch of weirdos. but yeah, they seemed really unsure as to why we sort of picked him out. But you know, that's why Unai Emery is one of the best coaches in the world, because he's got an eye for a player. And
I'd back Unai Emery and Monchi over two podcasts.
Really? Why not?
Not over the All Villa No Filler podcast, of course. No way.
You'd back people, you know, two people who were, you know, working football professionally as a career over two sort of bozos podcasts.
You know, which is what we are, George.
Which is what we are. Hey, there's no, I've got nothing against bozos, Frankie. I am one.
I think the thing with Rodgers is that what made me excited was, look, Monchi and Emery clearly have looked at whatever, underlying stats, everything with him, and know what they think they can make him into. It doesn't necessarily mean it's going to work, but there have been signs in some of the games he's played where you think, I see it here. And yesterday was the best performance he's had for Villa so far. Yes, he needs to release the ball a bit sooner on occasions, but also his ability to work his way out of trouble. He's quite similar to Jacob Ramsey in the sense I see why they can occupy quite similar roles. Mm-hmm. I wonder if Rodgers could actually adapt into a second striker, you know, that physical one I was talking about just a moment ago. But I do think it's probably his natural role is out, sort of where him and Ramsey are. I do wonder if he's just like, they're both direct. Maybe Rodgers has slightly more skill, like to get past the man, maybe. But I think with Rodgers, give him a year of Unai Emery's coaching and see where he is in a year's time. I think yesterday was a really exciting sign of what he potentially could be.
Yeah, I agree. I think we're just starting to see it now. And there's so many players who either, you know, Rodgers obviously we signed in January, but other players like Zaniolo, Duran, who have been bit part players for a lot of the season. But I think, you know, because of we're getting to the end of the season now, I think tiredness is a factor and fitness is a factor, where players who haven't probably played as many games as they might want to have done will probably start to feature a bit more. And it's good to see players like that actually finding a bit of form. As I said, you know, Duran was making himself a menace, as he always does, but you know, there is quality there with Duran. And I know he needs to probably work on his temperament, but you know, with Watkins, we probably need to talk about Watkins as well. The fact he went off it sounds like a hamstring injury. You know, he might be an issue for Wednesday against Man City. But when Duran came on, I wasn't really too concerned about that.
Yeah, particularly against Wolves yesterday. I thought he'd be all right.
And I kind of think, you know, if we started Duran on Wednesday, which to be honest, I think we might do. I think even if Watkins is 85%, I wouldn't risk him. We got Brentford the week after Villa Park, and you know, Brentford, as we saw against United yesterday, that they're still a very decent side, and they can cause you problems. But you'd want Watkins back for that game. So Man City's a bit of a free hit, isn't it? He's this enigma, and I think if you play him against a team like Man City, they might be a bit unsure about how he actually operates. I mean, I'm unsure about how he operates. As I said, players like him and Zaniolo looked really good when he came on as well.
Zaniolo's finding form just at the right time.
He is. Exactly. I don't know if he can do enough between now and the end of the season to earn a permanent deal with us. I don't know. There's a part of me that feels like, you know, he might go to like another club and really do well. It's a part of me. Do you know what I mean? Like, I feel like if we didn't sign him, I think the club that does will get a really good player if he can keep himself fit. You know, they might see the best of him. He's only 24, or you know, he's still so young. I think towards the end of the season we'll be seeing a lot of bit part players more often, and I'm kind of excited to see how they get on. To be honest, because we've got a lot to prove.
And it's a great sign they're coming into form, and it's also a great sign, you know, John McGinn's been out for the last two games, And, you know, when he got that red card in the 4-0 loss to Spurs, you're thinking, oh, God. But this team constantly show their resilience. We have a bad loss and then we always bounce back.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, West Ham draw, we've gone and beaten Wolves comfortably. And you've done that with a team that, again, beset with injuries. Jacob Ramsey, John McGinn, Emi Buendia, Tyrone Mings, Ollie Watkins having to go off in halftime. Diego Carlos was missing for the West Ham game. Matty Cash
Torres was missing for a long time as well.
The fact that we've got that resilience and the sort of no excuse culture that Unai Emery, you know, talks about. You know, this is why I see him as Unai Al Ghaib, you know, like Paul Atreides of Aston Villa. Everything he says, I was just looking at, like yesterday when he's talking about pressure, and he's saying it's, you know, pressure is trying to find your income for your family, pressure is trying to stay up in the Premier League. You know, and it's the way he says it. His communication skills are so good that he must set his own players at ease. You know, make them think, actually, we don't need to worry. We can do this. You know, it's you know, whereas, you know, in managers we've had in the past, it's blame the players if it's not going right and spread toxicity. So that's just not what Emery does. It's so refreshing, both on the pitch and off the pitch with him. The one thing I would note from yesterday's game, though, my only criticism was during the 45 minutes, the 60 minute mark. This has been a common problem for Villa, that we don't seem to play well in that moment. And it's when Spurs got away from us. I thought the same again yesterday. We're a very, very like calm and collected team.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we can have pina coladas on the pitch, you know, and just, you know, chill out, get the deck chairs out, pass it around while other teams furiously chase after us. But there's a fine line between being calm and collected and then maybe just slightly falling too far into casual.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like there are moments in that spell, and it is when we can see goals, that 45 to 60 minute mark, where we look a little casual. But I did want, you know, I was in about the 51st minute, I think Moreno made a mistake. Moreno had a poor game yesterday. Yeah. Everyone's entitled to a poor game. Moreno's obviously coming back from a very long injury. He's going to be in and out of form. I expect that. But yesterday was probably one of the worst games I've seen him have for Villa. And I thought in the first minute, I thought, you just got to bring Dean on now, because it just feels like there's a mistake coming here from Moreno where it's going to cost us.
Yeah.
We waited until the 60th minute, and by that point, he'd already made another mistake. And I thought, I don't know whether he strictly abides by leave it to the 60th minute. This is how I manage the minutes of these players. But it just felt like, I feel like Dean should have been on quite a bit sooner. And it could have proven costly. But, you know, when Dean came on, he made a big difference, because Moreno was just not quite happening for him. And then Zaniolo came on at the same time, and he himself as well made a big difference. So, other than that, you know, not much really to complain about. I think, you do have to take into account Wolves are missing Neto, Huang and Cunha. Obviously, that makes a massive difference for them. But at the same time, you know, they're still tough team to beat. They've still had lots of good results recently, and the fact that we just sort of outclass them, you know, that's amazing to see.
All Villa No Filler on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook and Instagram.
Welcome back, everybody. Now it is time for this.
Could George and I get into a row a bit like Pep Guardiola and Jack Grealish after the end of the City Arsenal game? Did you see that, George? The little set.
I did. I mean, Pep was in full Pep mode, wasn't he? He was sort of gesticulating and, you know, throwing his arms around. And
this is what I do whenever the podcast ends. I'm just gesticulating like, George, this is what we should have said. This is what we should have done. Why didn't you say this and that? But as I ask this, the spicy question today, George, I ask you, can Aston Villa beat Manchester City this Wednesday?
Well, we've done it before, Frankie.
We've done it before.
And we played very well, and we deserve to win that game.
Yeah.
Probably our best game of the season.
No Pep Guardiola team has ever been as dominated ever in all of his managerial career as we did against them in December.
Yeah, I mean, that was just a phenomenal performance.
Extraordinary.
I mean, you know, As I said earlier, Frankie, Wednesday is a bit of a free hit. You know, we're still, I think we're still, we're 3 points ahead of Spurs.
Yeah.
You know, if you look at our fixtures to come, there are certainly, you know, evidently more winnable games on paper. But the Premier League is the Premier League because it throws up shocks right, left and centre. You know, yesterday, I don't think too many people would have said Brentford would have dominated Man United in the way they did. I mean, I would have foreseen it because I think United have been playing dreadfully all season. But you know, a lot, you know, obviously Man United did well in the FA Cup against Liverpool and you know, they're still sixth. So, you know, they are winning games.
I'm telling you, if anyone in this world has sold their soul to the devil, the only explanation for Man United conceding a million chances every game and somehow eking out late winners and draws is there's evil at work here, George. There's a reason there's a devil on that shirt, mate. There's a reason.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. There's some black magic, some voodoo going on. But yeah, you know, you still probably wouldn't have thought Brentford would have been as dominant as they were. But my point being is you know, you just don't know. I mean, Burnley drawing, I know Chelsea are dreadful, but Burnley drawing away at Chelsea when down to 10 men, you wouldn't have seen that one coming. So, no. You know, it'll throw up surprises everywhere you and think, okay, we'll win that one or we'll draw that one. We'll evidently be defeats and whatever. So I think you have to go into that game and think, you know, you've got a chance. We are obviously a very good side. We're fourth in the Premier League, and that, and it's April, you know. So evidently, we are a good side. So we can cause any team in the Premier League problems. You know, I watched Man City against Arsenal today. Okay, Arsenal again, a good side. So obviously, they were going to cause Man City problems. They were going to be difficult to break down. Arsenal have a very good defensive record this season, but you know, Man City didn't particularly impress me today, really.
Boring.
Yeah.
Boring.
Yeah, it was a dreadful game of football.
Yeah.
You know, they've got a couple of injury issues. I think Ake came off early in the game as well. So who knows? I mean, I was talking about Watkins earlier and I can imagine that he will probably be rested on Wednesday. I don't know the extent of his injury. But you'd think, given that he came off, you know, that's probably with one eye on the Brentford game, as I mentioned, next weekend rather than the Man City game. And I think the Man City game could be an opportunity for, as I mentioned, bit part players, players who want to sort of get into the side to get a few minutes. I wouldn't be surprised to see Zaniolo start. I wouldn't be surprised to see Rodgers start again. You know, I wouldn't be surprised to see maybe even Ramsey appear, you know, because he's back training now, so he'll probably need to get some minutes in his legs, and we'll just, you know, see what happens. I think we've got a good enough squad, regardless of who plays, to be competitive.
Yeah.
Whether that's enough to get a win against Man City, I'm not so sure. I you know, in my heart of hearts, I don't think so. But as I said, Frankie, anything can happen, and we have beaten them before. And Unai Emery is a fantastic coach, so who knows?
Yep. Well, Jack Grealish is back. He's going to want to prove a point after, you know, that set to after the game today with Pep Guardiola. I wouldn't be surprised if he has some impact. But it's funny watching Man City today because, I mean, it was such a boring game with Arsenal. I think I understand why Arsenal played the way they did because they just keep getting battered at that place. Yeah. So they had to change something. And fair enough, it worked for them. But City, like, it's weird to think of Guardiola's best ever teams, you know, Barcelona and even at City, and think, see them today and think they're just lots and lots of big physical muscular units.
Yeah.
With like a Phil Foden and a Doku thrown in here and there. They're not good to watch. They're actually really not. They're quite cumbersome and clunky, even though they are a brilliant football team who can overawe you with their, you know, their moments of incredible interchanges, and then but also they can physically overawe you. You know, I think Rodri is just such a major player for them. They're not the same player team without him. They really aren't. So yeah, I think having trying to overcome that physical aspect is going to be difficult if we don't have, you know, a McGinn in the centre and a Ollie Watkins up front. I slightly think this might be the game where we've, you know, not really having an out-and-out CDM, Kamara out.
Yeah.
I think this is a bit of, I think that's a problem in the centre with Tielemans and Luiz. It's a lot to ask of them to deal with that.
For me, I think defensively, I'm not too worried. I think, you know, Martinez, particularly, I think if we play Torres and Carlos in particular, I think could, you know, manfully deal with Haaland. Torres, you've obviously, he's a ball playing defender and can sort of spread balls in counter attacks. You know, I imagine Dino will probably start at left back, given how well he came on as a sub against Wolves, and Konsa obviously doing such a good job at right back, adds a bit of physicality to the back as well. So defensively, I'm quite happy. Up front, I'd actually be quite happy with Duran and Danny in Diaby and someone up there. Like, I would just think, like, that's perfect. That's absolutely fine. But yeah, I think in midfield is where we would struggle. I think that we could quite easily get overrun. As good as Luiz is, as good as Tielemans are, they're not particularly physical. So I would kind of worry about that.
I think Tielemans has played really, really well. I think he was excellent against Wolves as well. But
yeah, he's great.
Yeah, I just wonder if that in that centre there, we could have done with a McGinn and a Kamara, just their presence. But, you know, I wouldn't rule out that Unai Emery has a plan that we don't foresee coming. Maybe changes things up for Pep. You know, maybe Pep's too busy shouting at Guardiola for Jack Grealish for the next 2 days and forgets all about it. I think if Watkins is fit, going direct, you know, if Kyle Walker isn't there, going direct over the top might actually be a good route. Just bypass all of them.
Diaby and Bailey, if they play,
exactly,
they could cause that defense some problems.
Yeah,
sure.
Don't be afraid to go direct and sort of get Watkins running off the last defender. And then, as you say, like if Bailey and Diaby have any moments together on the pitch, then you could have the two of them having an interchange and breaking forward. It's going to be really, really difficult. City, you know, the favourites, and they're probably going to dominate the game. But you know, Villa have Liverpool, Arsenal, and City to come. We have a big say on this title race, and we are in the title race. You know, we're not that far behind. You know, if we beat City in a few days, we're right up next to them. So
just so how far? I mean, I'm getting ahead of myself.
We're not in the title race, but you know, this is what I'd be saying to the players.
No, hold on,
come on, lads, we're in the title race.
I don't. Well, Frankie, I tell you what, if we beat them, you know. We'll be 2 points behind them. Yeah. Again, they'll have played a game less, but we will be 2 points behind.
Yeah. So, but I mean,
and then how many points off Liverpool? Another sort of three points, I think. But anyway, that's by the by.
That they haven't lost in like a long time at home. I anticipate that City will probably get the job done, but at the same time, I think Villa really can cause them problems if we just defend resolutely, don't cave in, and look to just try and hit them on the counter as, you know, rapidly and as smartly as we can.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll leave it there. Frankie, we'll obviously beat Man City on Wednesday, so looking forward to chatting about that with you on Thursday. Thank you, everybody, for listening. I've been your host, George Zelinski. Frankie, I will see you later.
Happy Easter, George, and up the mighty Villa.
Up the mighty Villa. It's goodbye from me too. We'll be back again soon, but until then, come on, Super Aston Villa.